321-0181, the people of the state of Illinois, Appalachia versus Darius D. Brown, appellant.
Ms. Patton, you may proceed.
My name is Leah Patton, and I represent the appellate Darius Brown.
Thank you.
May it please the court and counsel. This is a criminal case where 2.5 years passed between when Darius was arrested and incarcerated and when his bench trial was held, despite his repeated demands for speedy trial. His trial attorney agreed to 2 delays when he shouldn't have done so, and his attorney should have but did not argue for dismissal based on a speedy trial violation. Darius also requested at 2 different times during his case to represent himself, and the trial court summarily denied those requests. After the bench trial was held, Darius filed a motion for new trial based on ineffective assistance of his trial attorney. The trial court failed to conduct a preliminary determination before appointing Krankel counsel. Even if the trial court properly conducted a preliminary determination, the trial court later allowed Krankel counsel to withdraw, did not appoint new Krankel counsel, and left Darius to represent himself at the combined Krankel and motion for new trial hearing. First, Darius's trial attorney was ineffective for failing to either file a motion to dismiss or adopt Darius's pro se motion to dismiss for violation of speedy trial, and by requesting 2 continuances. And those continuances resulted in the speedy trial clock being tolled. In custody, defendants like Darius must be brought to trial within 120 days from arrest, unless the defendant causes delays. In this case, there was more than one pending case. And in that situation, the state can elect which case to proceed with first. And in this case, the state elected to proceed with a different case first, a harassment of the witness case. That case is governed by the 120-day period. This case is governed by the 160-day period. And the time between the election and resolution of the first charge is tolled. So speedy in this case was tolled between September 5th, 2019, the date of the election, until January 10th, 2020, when the case was disposed of. I believe the parties are in agreement that 118 days are attributable to the state in this case, specifically the 28-day delay from March 28th, 2018, which is the date of the arrest, until April 19, 2018, which was a pretrial conference date. Also, the 6-day delay from July 31st to August 6, 2019. Further, the 51-day delay from January 10th to March 2nd, 2020, which was the original trial date in this case. And finally, a 35-day delay from July 7th to August 11th, 2020. Darius's position is that there were other delays that are attributable to the state, and that these total delays exceed the 160-day period. And as a result, his right to a speedy trial was violated, and his attorney was ineffective in not making those arguments before the trial court. First, there was a 9-day delay between May 30th until June 8th of 2018. And Darius's position is that delay should be attributable to the state. At the May 30th pretrial conference, Darius's trial attorney requested a continuance of trial. Darius objected to the continuance and requested a faster, speedier trial, and he wanted to proceed pro se. He clearly and unequivocally asserted his right to discharge his attorney and represent himself. And his trial attorney was ineffective in requesting a continuance under those circumstances, which had the effect of tolling speedy trial in his case.
Second. Well, can you just tell me your position in the ordinary circumstance where a defendant's not attempting to proceed pro se, but just the attorney wants a continuance for her own reasons to review the case, whatever, and the defendant's sitting beside her and saying, no, I want a speedy trial. I mean, the attorney gets to decide that. Is that fair?
I think that's a fair assessment in that sort of situation.
Okay, continue.
We're also arguing that the 2-day delay from August 6th to August 8th, 2019 should be attributable to the state. Darius had demanded speedy trial on or about July 31st, 2019. And the state at that time needed additional time to calculate speedy trial, which was the main reason for that short continuance period. We're also arguing that the 28-day delay from August 8th to September 5th, 2019 should also be attributable to the state. The parties on August 8th were ready to set a trial date under Darius's speedy trial demand. Both sides repeatedly request a trial date be set on September 30th. The court would not set the trial on that date because there was another trial set on that date. And it was only when it was clear that the court would not set a trial for the 30th, which is what the parties asked, that Darius' attorney suggested the next available date, which was October 7th, which was only a week later. And so our position is that 1 week delay was not due to Darius's actions, that was because of the court's busy trial docket at the time.
Ms. Patton, I'm a little confused. Do the times prior to the completion of the first trial still count? You're going back into 2018 and 2019, and the trial ended January 30th, 2020. And that starts the new 160-day period, right?
I believe the trial in this case eventually ended up happening, the bench trial. It was started on, if I remember right, September 1st of 2020. And they were not able to complete it in one day, and it went over the course of several different days, and it was kind of broken up quite a bit. And so our position would be that the 160 days includes any periods that are not attributable to Darius that would be attributable to the state, except for obviously the period between when the harassment case, that case was elected, and then when that harassment case got done, those periods are told during that time. But there are various times also where we're not disagreeing that Darius, that his attorney requested continuances that we do not dispute and that are attributable to Darius.
Okay, that's not really answering my question though. And my question is basically asked, it's not a trick, it's just ignorance. I thought that when the trial was over in the first case, that the defendant then had 160 days for speedy trial, and that was basically a whole new counting. But you're going back to 2018 and 2019. My impression was that statutorily you don't look at that anymore. Am I wrong about that?
I guess I was under the impression that those times would count, but if I'm not, if well, you know,
does,
my
does
reading is incorrect.
Does the state agree those times would count? Because I believe they do. Once the trial court, once the state chooses to go on that later charge, that time from the first events, okay, I'm not phrasing right, until that election is made, are counted, unless the delay within that period would be caused by the defendant. So you don't start, once that trial and that later charge concluded, it's 160 minus whatever occurred before the election by the state. Is that correct?
I think that's correct.
I will ask the state that, but that, hypothetically, if it took 30 days before the election of the state elected to go with the most recent charge to try, correct?
Yes, I believe that's the case.
And so that period of time until that election was made again, should be subtracted from the 160 at the conclusion of that trial. I'm confused by it as well, but I thought that was what I understood.
It doesn't seem to be what the statute says, but we don't need to take time from your argument, though.
I have a question. I didn't mean to interrupt, Justice McDade.
No, go ahead.
I have a question related to the last time period that you brought up, this 8-8 to 9-5. The parties, if the court had been available on 9-30, that would have been an agreed date. Is that correct?
I believe that would be.
So that they were agreeing to that date, and the court said, well, I'm unavailable that day. So under that circumstance, and then the court picks a 10-7 date about a week later. Under that circumstance, does the state eat the entire period 8-8 to 10-7, or does it just eat 9-30 to 10-7? Eat's a bad way to put that. Does it suffer the count, if you will?
So are you saying, I guess I'm
confused. Well, I'm asking, they both agreed. My understanding is they both said, okay, we're fine by agreement with this 9-30 date. The court says, can't do that date. I can do 10-7. And I don't know the answer. I'm asking you, under the case law, does the state, I'm going to just say it, eat the entire period or just the period from where they agreed to the 10-7 date?
Our position would be the entire period. And just to clarify, the court isn't the one that suggested the October 7th date. I believe it was Darius's attorney when it became very clear that the court was like absolutely not going to set trial for the 30th.
Right.
So there was just no option at that point.
I'm more curious about the period that he did want, that from that 9:30 date going backwards. But please continue.
Okay. Also, the 56-day delay from March 2nd to April 27th, 2020 should be attributable to the state. At the time, it was attributable to Darius. So at that, and this was the original trial date, the March 2nd date, his trial attorney moved to continue the trial. Darius repeatedly objected to a continuance. He repeatedly stated he wanted to proceed with trial and represent himself. He was clear and unequivocal in his desire to discharge his attorney and represent himself. And also, his attorney's motion to continue appears to have been brought on or necessitated by the state's late filing of discovery just before trial. Our position is that his attorney was ineffective in requesting a continuance under these circumstances, which had the effect of tolling speedy. Further, we're arguing that the 2-day delay from August 11th to August 13th, 2020 should be attributable to the state. This short continuance was due to a power outage and the sheriff's inability to bring Darius over to the courthouse. And he should not be penalized by having that attributable to him. Further, the 12-day delay from August 19th to September 1st, 2020, which is the date of the actual trial in this case, should be attributable to the state. On August 19th, the state indicated it was ready to set and start Darius's trial on September 1st, even though one witness was not quite available due to COVID-19. However, the state intended to start the multiple-day trial with other witnesses on September 1st. So trial was going to start on September 1st and should not have been attributable and should not be attributable to Darius. There's also a 21-day delay that happened between April 27th to May 18th, 2020. This period of time, the trial court attributed this delay to the state at that time, even though there were some COVID-19 orders that were in effect during that period of time. Our position is that we don't believe the trial court abused its discretion. The trial court specifically found this delay was attributable to the state. due to the state's pending motions. There were some motions to compel and motions in limine. So in summary, we're arguing that there's a total of 249 days of delay, or if the court were to exclude that 21-day delay that I just talked about, if that was not properly attributed to the state because the COVID-19 orders, then 228 days elapsed. In either event, more than 60 days had elapsed, and Darius's trial attorney neither filed nor adopted his pro se motion to dismiss, and there's no reasonable justification for doing so. There is a reasonable probability Darius would have been discharged if a timely motion had been made, and therefore his attorney was ineffective in failing to raise the speedy trial issue.
Ms. Patton, your time has expired, but you will have time in your reply.
Okay. Thank you.
Counsel Navarro, you may respond.
Thank you. May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Karen Navarro, and I represent the state of Illinois in this matter. Following defendant's conviction, defendant appealed and raised four issues. But today I would like to address the first issue, which is the speedy trial. But if there's any questions to any of the other three issues, I'd be more than happy to address those as well. As counsel stated, there is an 118-day period, which the state agrees was attributed to the state during the trial, during the times for the trial. Specifically, I'd like to answer Justice McDade's question regarding the period during the election of that second case, the harassment case. While the statute does say that the charge is pending within 160 days from the date on which judgment of the first charge, that it essentially says 160 days from there, case law has supported that during the period that an election is made to the time that that first case is actually resolved, that time period is only told. So as Justice Holdridge stated, the time period from before the election, anything that was attributed to the state is also counted for in those 160 days. There's not an entire new 160 days that starts from the date of the disposition.
Okay.
And that can be seen, you're welcome, in People versus Klinner as well. So as I stated, those 118 days, the state is stating that they were attributed to the state. However, there are a couple of days that we believe that should not have been attributed to the state. May 30th to June 8th, that was a 9-day. It originally started with May 30th. The defendant appeared, but counsel was not present. Counsel appeared and defendant was not present. And then once counsel appeared again, counsel was not present and somebody stepped in. And that's when the counsel that stepped in requested a date of continuance for June 28th, I believe. And that's when defendant stated that he did not want that date. I wanted faster, speedy trial. So the court then inquired as to whether a shorter date could be done. It was conferred with counsel, and the date of June 8th, 2018 was proposed by the court. At that point, defense counsel agreed to that date and defendant did not object or express any concerns with that date. Nothing was said. And I would like to note that in defense counsel's reply brief, they noted that there was no way that defendant could have objected to it because the court did not allow defendant to speak anymore. However, when we look at the record, it shows that defendant attempted to speak. The court told defendant that it would not be listening at the moment. And then the court again started speaking and stated how defendant was not brought up, but defendant was still able to speak and inform the court, actually, I was not brought up. It's not that I wasn't brought up. I was taken to a different courtroom. So here, defendant, even after being instructed by the court that initial time not to speak, still spoke out in other regards and addressed the court's questions. However, no objection was made to the June 8th date. So it's that's the reason why it's the state's position that that should not be attributed to the state, but rather to defendant, because both defense counsel and defendant expressed no objection to the June 8th date. When we moved to a continuance from August 6th to August 8th, again, it was defense counsel that suggested the August 8th date, and defendant also did not object to that date. When we moved from the date from August 8th,
was the court, August 8th, can I just ask that 8-6 to 8-8, that continuance was so the state could calculate the speedy trial term. Is that right?
So that continuance, when it first started, they noted that the case had been continued previously so that the state could calculate speedy trial. But on August 6th, it was defense counsel that stated there's new information and requested the August 8th date. So it wasn't, it was defense counsel that said, I have new information and I'm requesting August 8th as the date. So that's why that would be attributed to defense counsel. Then on August 8th, both parties appeared. There was an agreed upon date of September 30th for trial to be set. However, the court, due to docketing issues, could not accommodate that date, and it was scheduled for October 7th. However, from August 8th to September 30th, that was an agreed upon date by defense counsel and by the state. So that would not be attributed to the state. It's the state's position that the delay essentially occurred from September 30th to October 7th, which is where the docketing issue became. However, in the court never went to that October 7th date. It ended up coming earlier on September 5th when that new election occurred. So if you look at it from that perspective, from August 8th to September 5th, that was an agreed upon date by defendant because that initial date that they agreed upon was September 30th. And September 5th was way before that September 30th date that was agreed upon by defendant. Therefore, from August 8th until September 5th, when the new election occurred, that was not attributed to the state because it wasn't agreed upon date by both parties.
Does it not seem a little fair? I mean, I don't think there's a fact pattern that's going to be identical in any of the case law that I'm aware of, but does it not seem a little unfair to say, all right, we agree to this trial date, but then weeks before we're like, all right, fine, we've changed our mind and we're going to proceed on another case, to still say that that period of time here, I guess, between 8-8 and 9-5 is agreed to. I mean, it was agreed to in the context of, okay, if you're correct, it's agreed to, okay, we're going to have a trial on, you know, October 7th. But on September 5th, we've changed, the state changes its mind and says, no trial, we're going to elect on this other case. Should they still be eating the 8-8 to 9-5 period in that context?
It would be the state's position that that still would be attributed to, it would not be attributed to the state because the timing and the days counting towards a speedy trial are not being affected in any way. Whether it had been actually gone to trial on that October 7th date, it still should have only been that September 30th to October 7th date that would have been attributed to the state. So the numbering that would count remains the same under the first October 7th date and under the second one where the September 5th date for the election occurred. The dates so in themselves.
Perhaps another way to look at it is that the reason for the agreed delay doesn't really matter. It was agreed and then something intervened and that's just the way it is.
Yes. So there would be the state's position that it's that initial agreement, regardless of the reasoning behind it, the state and the defendant both agreed to that date, which means they were agreeing to that time period elapsing. It actually ended up being a shorter time period than the long period that had been agreed upon by both. So that's why it would not be attributed to the state. And I would also like to note that there was on March 2nd, there was a time period from March 2nd, 2020 to April 27th, where there was a continuance. Here again, there were still pretrial motions that needed to be acknowledged. And in between this continuance is when the Illinois Supreme Court order came into effect on March 20th, which was continuing all cases for 60 days due to the COVID pandemic. And the 12th Circuit also issued an administrative order on March 24th, essentially doing the same thing, continuing everything. I know defense counsel in the reply brief stated that the date of tolling essentially did not start on March 20th when that initial Supreme Court order came out, but would rather be in effect at a later date due to the subsequent orders that were sent out in order to clarify that initial March 20th order. And here, even if there's a date between March 2nd and March, or I'm sorry, the state was saying between March 2nd and March 20th, that could have been attributed to the state, even if that were extended even longer, that still would have put us well below the 160 days. However, the state's position is still that the period from March 2nd until April 27th should not be attributed to the state, both because there was still preliminary motions that needed to be addressed. Also, the time period due to the COVID pandemic where courts were not able to, in a safe manner, hold actual trials that would fall under the Supreme Court order as well as the administrative order. Even looking to that last Supreme Court order that was issued on June, I believe it was June 30th, when it was issued, yes, June 30th, 2021. Even there, the Supreme Court in its order explained that it was tolling for speedy trial purposes up until October 1, 2021. And it stated that any days after October 1, 2021 would start the speedy trial clock again. And even in that order, it addressed that any dates prior to April 3rd, 2021 could be included in the speedy trial. So that is in essence stating that from April 3rd, 2020 up until October 21st, 2021, that was all tolled. And I understand the state's defense positions where it stated that was not explicitly stated in that March 2020 order. However, at the same time, we need to look at the circumstances that were occurring in that time where everything was very unknown to everybody in that time. And orders were coming out as more information was being found out. And they were all as they were coming out, they were clarifying previous orders. So we still believe that even though it wasn't until April 7th when the Supreme Court stated that any continuance would not go to either the state nor the defendants, that was essentially clarifying its previous order. And then on April 9th is when the Supreme Court in its order actually used the word told, that the speedy trial would be told. However, it was still in previous orders, even in the administrative order on March 24th by the 12th Circuit, it stated that any continuance would not be attributed to neither the state nor the defense. So that's why we believe that anything from March 2020 to April 27th should not be attributed to the state. Similar on April 27, 2020, there was a continuance by the court to May 18, 2020. During that proceeding, the court stated that it was because speedy trials were being suspended. So even in that circumstance, the court acknowledged that the reason for this continuance was based on the administrative orders and the Illinois Supreme Court orders due to speedy trial being suspended. So that continuance should not have been attributed to the state, as it was in essence based on the speedy trial being told. Similar from August 11th to September 1st, when there was actually a trial, there were continuances in between that, but the essence of those continuances were all based on the fact that a state witness had COVID, and that is why they were being continued. The state noted that the witness would be cleared from COVID by September 9th, but it still stated, I can start on September 1st in order to expedite this. We can start without that witness. But September 1st was the first date that the state could safely start trials, which is exactly what was protected by the administrative orders, by the Illinois Supreme Court orders regarding COVID. That's why it's the state's position that those dates should not be attributed to the state. So here, the state's position is that only 118 days passed from the date of defendant's arrest to the date of being brought to trial. And even if there were the between March 2nd and April 7th, those dates were attributed to the state, it would still only bring the count to 140 days, which is well below the 160 days that the trial court, I'm sorry, that the state had to bring defendant to trial. And it's for those reasons that we ask this court to deny defendant's argument.
Clarify for me, counsel, when the defendant said to the court, I want to represent myself. What time frame was that in?
Your Honor, that would have been in May. There was two instances, one on May 30th and one on March 2nd. And they were both brought up shortly after or immediately after a continuance was brought up. So defense counsel would say, I would like a continuance to the state. And defendant would immediately state, I want to go pro se. Once a new date was proposed, a shorter date, defendant would no longer say anything, would no longer renew his request.
Thank you, counsel. Any questions from the court? Are there questions?
No.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel Patton, you may reply.
Yes, may it please the court. I just wanted to address a few things that were brought up by the state. Specifically, I'll start with the March 2nd, 2020 to April 27th, 2020, that delay period. The state had brought up that the state had filed some pretrial motions. So there had been several pretrial motions in limine. For that period, those were obviously the state's motions. In all fairness, that any delay due to the state's motions should be attributable to the state. And those motions could have been heard on also on the date of trial. And then also looking at the Supreme Court COVID orders and the 12th Circuit COVID orders and dealing with the tolling issue. Our position is that Speedy was not told between March 20th when the first Supreme Court order was entered dealing with COVID until April 27th, 2020, which was the date when trial had been continued from March 2nd. So our position is that the Supreme Court's orders did not specifically provide for tolling of trials until the order that occurred on April 7th. And at that time, it became clear at that point that if trials were continued because of COVID, then tolling would apply at that point. Also, the 12th Circuit's April 9th, 2020 order, which implemented the Supreme Court's April 7th order, was not an order that allowed blanket continuances of all criminal trials, like in this case. What it in fact did is it allowed criminal trials to be continued on a case-by-case basis. So looking at each docket and determining whether or not a case was appropriate for continuance or not. And in a case was continued, then tolling would apply at that point. So our position is that Speedy could not have been told, if at all, until April 27th. And that is the date, and that's April 27th, 2020. And that is the date when the trial court actually continued the April 27th date until May 18th. Let's see here. Then I'll go back up to May 18th, 2018. So that period from May 18th, 2018 until June 8th, 2018. There's been an argument by the state that Darius did not object to the sooner date of June 8th, because it was originally proposed to be a later date. Darius made it very clear that he wanted to have a faster trial date, and he objected to any continuance. Although he did not specifically object to the June 8th date, he wasn't given the opportunity to object to that date. He was clearly just cut off by the court and told by the court not to interrupt the court anymore. It would have been fruitless for Darius to have tried to object at that point. And at that point, the court had already made its decision and had moved on at that point. I think those are the only two that I wanted to address, unless the court has other questions.
Further questions?
No.
No, thank you.
Okay. All right. So on behalf of Darius, we're just requesting, at least concerning the issue that we've argued today, the speedy trial issue, that his attorney was ineffective in failing to argue a speedy trial violation. And we are requesting a remand for dismissal of his case. And for the other arguments in our brief, we're just asking for a remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, both for your arguments in this matter this morning. It will be taken under advisement and a written disposition shall issue. And at this time, the clerk of our court will escort you out of our remote courtroom, and the court will proceed. Thank you.